As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today.
Welcome to the Rocket Ship Podcast. I'm Matt Goldman.
And I'm Joelle Steiniger. Today we had Elliot Pepper on for the third time. He's the author of the Uncommon Stock series. And we focused our conversation around storytelling as the key component for any CEO. Really interesting stuff. I'm curious what you thought, Matt.
Yeah, he talked about storytelling in the context of public relations, pitching to investors, crafting a story to show to customers. And a big piece of it was authenticity. And he also talked about other factors that help your story stand out from other companies and covered why you should be focusing on that stuff at the earliest stages. We're so happy to have Customer.io supporting the show again. We use Customer.io for Hookfeed, and we absolutely love the power it gives us. Customer.io is a data-driven email platform that helps you communicate better with your customers. The kicker is that their powerful rules-based targeting enables you to keep your messages human, even as you automate them and scale. Go to customer.io/rocketship to start sending emails that convert. Elliot, give us an update. You've been on the show twice before. This is the third time. You've written two books. What are you focused on now?
Well, I'm focused on getting out book three, which comes out next month. So to add to those two and finish out the trilogy. And outside of my writing, I work with entrepreneurs to build new technology businesses. So those are often early stage businesses like seed stage through Series B or C. But sometimes it's even larger, as we talked about before the show. I was recently down in San Diego, where you guys are based, working with Qualcomm on storytelling.
So a big aspect of the way you're helping these companies is around storytelling and how it can be applied to different parts of running a business. What are some of the things besides Qualcomm that you've done in the past years around storytelling?
Sure. So, I think that the really interesting thing here is when most people, including me, think about storytelling, we think about it as something you do around a fire, when you go camping, maybe something that a salesperson would do when they're trying to pitch a product. But we don't really think of it as being a big part of our day-to-day lives. And in fact, we're telling stories all the time. Humans actually think in narrative, right? That's how we process the world around us. And although many of us aren't aware of it, whether we're aware of it or not, it really does impact not only our own lives, but also how effective our interactions are with other people. And in the entrepreneurship space, the top 1% of founders, that's the storytelling is the skill that really distinguishes them. There's a great quote that I think sort of like summarizes this quite well. It's the author of The Little Prince, who was also a pioneering aviator in the early 20th century. And he said, if you want to build a ship, don't drum up people to collect wood and don't assign them tasks and work, but rather teach them to long for the endless immensity of the sea. And I think that really is in many ways entrepreneurship in a nutshell. Again, we typically think of storytelling that's pretty far removed from the task of managing a business, when in fact, when you're a founder, storytelling is essentially the core of your job. Like your day, if you literally think about the logistics of your day, you show up, you're talking to investors to try to raise money for your startup or to just manage the existing investors, perhaps on your board. You're talking to your direct reports and the executives on your management team and trying to keep them inspired and on the same page. And then they have to turn around and do that to their direct reports and the rest of the organization. So you have to keep the entire team inspired. You're working with partners who you need to be able to communicate with effectively and, again, really inspire and get them excited about the company. Same with press. And so when you think about it, for most founders, storytelling is actually the thing that they do the most, even though they don't think about it that much. And I think what's interesting is that if you do take a little bit, take 10 minutes out of your day to reflect on storytelling as a craft, it can actually dramatically leverage all the rest of those activities.
So help us out with some examples, if you can, of how you can improve at storytelling, or like maybe even a different way to think about what you do on a day-to-day basis to incorporate more storytelling and more vision into it.
Sure. So, I think that there are a couple ways to break this down. If we go with like a really concrete example, so I spent a number of years as an entrepreneur in residence at T2 Venture Capital, which is a seed fund based in San Diego. And we would get pitched by entrepreneurs all the time. And there were some really, really simple things that could have vastly improved the quality of most pitches. Because normally when entrepreneurs go to pitch investors, and by the way, this isn't just for investors. The same rule applies to if you're pitching TechCrunch to try to get featured or, any other kind of press or partner. When you're talking to someone external to the organization, especially for founders who are also makers or engineers, it's very, very typical to talk a lot about the product. So it's like, okay, this is what we built. This is why it's cool, right? Like, here are the different features that are amazing, and they're better than anything, right? And although that's very accurate, you can go into deep detail and describe what it is you're building, that is not how you get someone else on board, particularly an investor, because investors don't care about what you're building. Like, they don't care how, you know, that specific aspect of what you're building is different, or why this feature is special, or how much work went into it. They care about the impact that it has on the world around you. So they're interested in what problem you're solving, not in the solution itself. And the majority of entrepreneurs, when they're pitching, will pitch a solution and talk about how great that solution is. And the interesting part is that it's not just that you need to talk more about the problem, because that's how people will understand the context for the solution you're building, but also because stories that are about perfection are really boring. Think about the last time you went to a Hollywood movie, right? Like, or any movie, or read a book. You know, if you have seen, like, you would almost think, because people think about, oh, movies or books that are, you know, fiction, it's sort of for escapism, right? Like, you want to, maybe you're bored on the train and you want to put yourself into another world. So you would almost imagine that a good story would be pure wish fulfillment, right? It would be like, Matt wins the lottery, buys a private island, goes there, meets a beautiful woman, gets married, buys a yacht, and then maybe some long descriptions of some delicious meals that they're eating and all the relaxation they're doing, right? But if you read that, nothing's interesting about that. There's no real human appeal. And that's because, for better or for worse, good stories are about misfortune. They're about human problems. So it could be external misfortune. So it could be like, oh my God, my house burned down, right? So that's something way beyond your control. Or they could be something internal, right? Maybe you have an internal shift and realize that whatever you've been doing really isn't the thing for you, or that you've been mistreating a friend or something like that, right?
So it's like about overcoming something.
It's about overcoming obstacles. And if you're going to tell a good story, you need to focus on the obstacle, not the ending, right? And so if you are building something and that something empowers your users, your customers, or yourself to overcome an obstacle, when you're pitching an investor, when you're pitching press, when you're really talking to more or less anyone, when you're trying to recruit a top new team member, spend a lot of time on why that obstacle is painful, why that problem is important, and then you'll find that you've just created the perfect context for your solution, right? And like, you can probably spend 2 to 3 sentences describing your solution at the end of the meeting and then go into questions.
And does that only apply to framing the solution, or could that also be used to describe the founder's story?
Oh, both, for sure. I think many of the best entrepreneurs solve their own problem, right? So, and that's for a very simple reason. If you're solving your own problem, you already know what it is. You don't have to figure out the details of a problem someone else has, right? So oftentimes those stories will be intertwined, although not always. It's not your own problem that you're solving, then yeah, you better really, really fundamentally understand the human aspects of why that problem is important to someone else. So not just, you know, oh, it has this effect, this percentage effect on their bottom line or on their funnel or whatever, like not those quantitative pieces, which are obviously important to understand, but the human piece, like what keeps them up at night? What drives them crazy? What are they worried about for their next performance review or, you know, whatever it is? And understanding that story and why it's important to people is really critical.
So that's great feedback for pitching. Transitioning over to something like PR, you look at a company like Slack, and they have a very well-defined story. And it's clear that they've played a role in shaping what that story is. Mm-hmm. When you're at an early stage and, you know, so much is unknown, how can you know what story to tell and tell it in the right way to the right people?
Sure. So that's a very good question. Obviously, more mature companies have more resources to throw at this as a problem, right? So it's like that's true of any startup as it grows. I think that for really early stage companies, what Slack does well, but also what SaaS companies do well, is that they are telling stories that are true to themselves and that are true to the founders, right? So if you're literally two founders in a garage, first of all, you may not need to tell your story as often to press because you probably need to build whatever it is you're building along the way, right? But when you are, even though you might pivot down the road, things might change, I think the really critical piece to keep in mind is to just be real. And this is the hardest thing for people to do at the beginning. I know this was hard for me. When I started my first company, me and my co-founders, we were very concerned with trying to create the appearance of being a real company, right? And I think this is pretty normal. Like, if you're working from your couch and you're talking, and then you go to an event and you're talking to someone about what you do, you sort of have this effect of feeling like, you know, the imposter syndrome, right? Like, how could I, like, am I really the CEO of a company that, you know, the main activity of which is eating ramen? It feels weird. And so the temptation is to try to build yourself up and sell yourself for more than you really are. So, you know, if a blogger wants to write a story about you because they think what you're building is cool, or, you know, it's very relevant to them for some other reason, if you were talking to them, you might feel the desire, because I know I always did, of trying to paint my, you know, our very modest business in much larger sort of like colors and terms, and tried to almost sound corporate, because it seems like sounding corporate would make us more respectable, right? And that was absolutely the wrong way to go about it. In fact, as a writer, I found that the absolute opposite. I found that the stories, whether they're blog posts, articles or novels or anything else, the stories that have found most resonance with readers are those that I am most scared to share. So the more vulnerable and open I am in the story itself, the more human and personal that story is, the more they seem to resonate, which sounds logical right now, like in this conversation, because I've thought about it in retrospect. But at the time when you're about to hit publish, or when you're about to, you know, admit something to, you know, to a journalist that you feel like might not match the brand that you hope to one day build, those are actually the gold, those golden moments that I think really allow people, other people who aren't your friends, aren't your mom, to connect with you. And that's,
well, that makes a lot of sense. Cause if you think about, like, you know, if you're at a cocktail party and you meet someone that's kind of talking themselves up, and, you're going to see through it in a second.
It's obvious, right?
And you're not going to feel like a connection to that person. You meet someone who's open and honest and, you know, shows a little vulnerability and, shows that they actually can see things for what they are. You're going to connect with that person just for the fact that they're honest with you.
Absolutely.
And even have more trust in them for that sake. And it's logical in that sense. But when you kind of look at it through the lens of your business, for some reason, it is harder to see.
And I think that the other mistake that people sometimes make is that, you know, like, okay, so you might run into a scientist or something, right? Or, someone who's building a company that's built on hardcore IP. Right. And their perspective might be, oh my God, there's no way I want to share anything about this, because won't that give away my business? And it's like, wait a minute, like we're talking about a level of human intimacy here, right? And I think that's exactly what you're getting at. And if you're doing something where the information is highly sensitive, your emotions aren't that sensitive, right? So you can talk about how you feel sort of frustrated that you can't reveal like the IP because the lawyers won't let you. Like, that's fine, right? As long as it's real. And I think that what you're saying is absolutely true. You know, the end result of telling a story well is building the trust of people around you. And people are really, really good at sniffing out lack of authenticity, right? And so, and to be honest, it's never worth it, right? Like, you and I did this for a long time. It was like, oh, you know, we try to build ourselves up. And in doing that, now you're setting up expectations that are totally out of line with reality that you're never going to be able to live up to, right? Which doesn't benefit you, customers, employees, or anything else. And ultimately, if you are able to make that connection, if you are able to build that trust, that's a relationship that will go way beyond that meeting, way beyond even your company, right? Like, that, you know, relationships are things that are not transactional. They're long-term, and you're going to see long-term benefits from building.
And is there a point where you have to be careful not to overdo the relatable or like the founder struggle side of the story beyond branding? Like, is there a point when you stop telling that story?
I mean, I think there's definitely a way to overdo it, which is if you try to blow that up to be more than it is, right?
Yeah, so it's
right. Like, if it's that much of a struggle, like, why are you doing
right,
it?
Kind of right. I mean, it's like, I mean, if it was like, oh my God, I wanted to be able to share photos online, and like, I was crying and I couldn't sleep for years, and, you know, like, I mean, I don't know, like that yeah, doesn't feel real, right? But I think that as long as you're being honest and you're being human and being personal, right, you're not really going to run into that problem, you know, just because. Even if you have to tell it, I think that the harder problem for founders as they, if you're growing and you end up telling this story to many, many people, the one of the hard things about being a good storyteller, particularly if you're having to pitch tons of investors over the course of years, you know, recruit executive team members over the course of years, talk to press over the course of years, is that that story can start feeling canned to you. Right. So the person hearing it, it's going to be their first time hearing it. But if it's your 10,000th time telling it, it can sort of feel like you're running through a script. And unfortunately for you, you need to get beyond that feeling and sort of continually try to rediscover your own enthusiasm for it, because you want to think about it from the audience's perspective, right? And just like when you were in high school and you had a teacher who was just running through the curriculum like they had done for 10 prior years and not even really conscious of what they were talking about, like that immediately gets boring, right? That immediately loses its emotional appeal. And so rediscovering your own enthusiasm is what makes a story contagious.
It's like playing Freebird for the 10,000th time. The audience yeah, loves it.
Exactly. So think of yourself like a rock star, right? And I think that the other, so this is sort of interesting. So we've talked about storytelling as a skill or as a craft as it relates to people outside your company or even people inside your company, like your employees, and keeping them inspired. But there's also a sort of a strategic level to this. You know, Ben Horowitz at Andreessen Horowitz, who built LoudCloud and a bunch of other companies, you know, he's like, his perspective, like, he literally has a quote that says, "Your strategy is your story." And that's, I think, really important to keep in mind as a founder and as an executive, is that when you're thinking about what your business is doing in the marketplace, what the relevance is to the world, you need to translate those ideas into narrative. Jeff Bezos actually did a great job. A great example for listeners is go search on Google for Jeff Bezos' 1997 letter to shareholders. It's like 3 pages long. It's a few pages long. And he does a fantastic job summing up the entire strategy of Amazon into a couple pages of extremely concise, extremely impactful narrative. And the important part there is that a strategy is not metrics. A strategy is not, a roadmap of objectives or goals that you're going to hit. A strategy is understanding why you're in business at all. It's understanding why employees should join your company, why they shouldn't leave once they're there. It's understanding why people should invest in you, and why people should be excited about you, and why you're going to win your market, right? Why you're important. And if that's sort of an evolving thing. It's something that obviously can change over time, but something you always need to keep present in your mind. And if you do, it can really help set the context, not just for how your teams execute, but also how the world sees you. And I think that's the heart of this, right? I mean, why is the heart of Simon Sinek's Golden Circles, right? So it's like, that's really the crux of story and why it's so important for founders.
So to kind of circle back and sum up the key points to focus on when you're thinking about your story, one obviously is authenticity, which should go without saying, but often doesn't. And the second is to not ignore the obstacles, that's really the interesting part of the story. Are there any other key things to think about that we haven't touched on?
Leave out the boring bits. Stories take practice, right? I mean, it's a craft, it's a skill. So one thing to pay attention to, and I think this can really help in terms of like an actionable thing to pay attention to, is how do you tell a story is good, right? Like if you're the one creating it, how can you tell it's good? Well, the funny thing is that we actually do tell stories all the time. So the next time you're at happy hour with your friends, and you tell a story just from your life, something that happened in your day, pay attention when you see which stories resonate more than others. And when I say resonate, I mean like which one gets a real laugh, right? Or which one, maybe it's not funny. So which stories do people immediately follow up with like in-depth questions and want to know more, right? And you'll discover very quickly that you actually are telling stories all the time, even though you're not thinking about it. And you'll start to observe in yourself the aspects that make those stories more interesting to others, you know, thinking about it from the audience's perspective. And so I think that would be, that would be another important thing to keep in mind. And then in terms of logistics, there are some easy things you can avoid, like buzzwords, like industry buzzwords or acronyms are almost always a bad idea, because if you use them, immediately you are alienating someone who doesn't know what they mean, right? So if you know you're talking to someone who definitely knows what they mean because you're in exactly the same industry, that would be the only time I would ever use a buzzword or an acronym, because otherwise it immediately leaves people out. And when people feel left out, they're going to tune out too, right? So that would be another easy one to to avoid. And then, the last thing is to really think about a story from your audience's perspective. And this is something that seems obvious theoretically, but is actually not often done in practice. And I often don't do it too. And an easy way to think about this is, again, in your personal life, if you were at like Thanksgiving dinner, I guess it depends on your family dynamic, but you might not tell a sex joke to your grandmother, right? But if you might, I don't know, make a pun. And if you're with your college roommate, it will be the opposite, right? Like you make a funny linguistic pun and it's like, are you serious? Whereas, you know, telling a sex joke then would be perfect, right? It would really, I don't know, fit the moment or fit the relationship. So we do this automatically in our personal lives, like assess what is actually relevant and important to the people we're talking to. But many people forget to do this in a business setting. And usually that's because because people spend time preparing a story like a slide deck, right? So maybe it's a sales slide deck, maybe it's a fundraising slide deck, maybe it's something else. So you've spent time prepping this story and you don't actually bother to adjust it based on who you're talking to. And so you want to think about that. Like one easy one to where it can sometimes be surprising, especially for first-time entrepreneurs, is when they're pitching investors. So many early stage entrepreneurs who haven't worked with tech investors before think, you know, if you think about it, it's like, well, what's actually motivating their decision making? Most people would assume it's like projected returns, you know, some kind of like differentiated tech, maybe that the idea is particularly clever. But that's not true. That's not why early stage investors actually write checks. The reason they actually write checks is fear of missing out, right? I mean, talk about an acronym, FOMO, fear of missing out. But early stage investors, you know, you spend all day long getting email pitches and taking coffee meetings with hundreds of entrepreneurs. And your goal is to try to find this elusive needle in a haystack. And it's really hard to know. It's not obvious. It's not like you really know. Like there's no financial history to look to. So how can you tell? How can you actually pick? And your biggest fear is that you're going to pass on the next Google or Facebook, right? It's like, oh my God, Mark Zuckerberg pitched me and I turned him down, right? And so every early stage investor sort of has that question sort of hanging out in the dark closet of their psychology during any founder meeting. And so because they're worried about missing out on the hottest deal, you want to keep that in mind when you're pitching. You want to make them feel like if they don't participate, they're missing the boat, right? The train is leaving the station whether or not they want to get on it, right? And how many other investors might be interested, and how even without their check, you are going to be successful. Because, you know, at the end of the day, the easiest way to raise money is not to need in the first place.
Yeah.
That's great.
Are there any resources you'd recommend to kind of...
There are a ton of good resources. I can send you, if you maybe you guys can throw this in the show notes. There's actually, I wrote a Medium guide to this that I think is
perfect.
Even in Startup Lessons Learned. So
yeah, we'll link to that in the page for this.
Yeah, so link to that. There are a lot of good resources out there about storytelling. In fact, one of the things that I think would be useful for people to check out, one is the Simon Sinek TED Talk. That I think is called The Golden Circle or something, really because it focuses on the why, which is the question you're answering. Ben, you're answering with story. Ben Horowitz's book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things, has a wonderful section on exactly this. And my guess is he may also have a blog post on the same topic, because I think that book is basically a collection of his blog posts. And the other thing that is a little bit off the beaten track is for people to check out, and unfortunately I don't have any specific suggestions here because there are just so many, to check out books on screenwriting or on the craft of writing stories, because those have some very specific lessons that people can really keep in mind. And probably the screenwriting ones are the best, because all Hollywood movies are designed from the outset to try to have mainstream appeal. And so understanding how to think through what mainstream appeal actually means from a demand perspective is something that most entrepreneurs could really learn from. And it's very different from what you're going to read in like TechCrunch or you know, a VC's blog or something.
Right. And that's so important, I think, to kind of step back from this little bubble and just think about human nature a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we all are.
Most of us.
But yeah, yeah.
Well, this has been great. Can you tell everyone where we can keep up with you online and when your third book is coming out?
Yeah. So you can easily find me at my blog. It's my name, Elliot Pepper, ELIOTPEPER.com. My third book, Exit Strategy, is coming out in the last week of July. It's the third book in the Uncommon series, which is a tech startup thriller series about a founder who starts a new software company and gets dragged into a whole international conspiracy along the way. And I'm on Twitter, at Elliot Pepper. I'm on Medium, you know, Facebook, all the normal places. I think that Rocket Ship Left listeners are probably tech savvy enough to Google my name and easily everything will pop up.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Elliot.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Rocket Ship Podcast. If you enjoyed it, we have tons of other awesome episodes on our website. Check them out, rocketship.fm.
And be sure to check out our app discount section, where we have discounts on products that we use every day, like Woo Themes, Wistia, Treehouse. Go to rocketship.fm/essentials and get your discounts today.